Greetings, salutations, blessed morning, goodly morning, taking that from Arts Blog. Everybody, this is Lion Zion 4. I am with my humble and gracious host, Mr. Sick, Coach Sick, the scruffy one himself. Welcome to SFG Podcast episode 28. How are you doing today, Mr. Scruff?
Good, man. I just want to thank everybody for, you know, tuning in and enjoying all the content that we're giving you guys. So,
and we're winning now, so you know, it's a lot better to do these podcasts.
It feels good.
When we're actually, you know, unbeaten in the last couple of days. I wonder how long it's going to take for me to say unbeaten. I was going to give myself a personal record of like 2-3 minutes into the pod, not 35 seconds. But we're unbeaten, so I'm happy. I'm in a good mood. Arsenal are, you know, not raising my blood pressure anymore for now.
I would like to see us a little higher up the table. But, you know, it's coming.
It's going to be there, man. It's going to happen.
As long as we keep winning. That's all that matters. You know?
Yeah, that's true.
Keep winning and you know, the rest will come.
Speaking of wins, today, let's go over to the quick rigmarole of what we're going on, what we got going on today. So the last episode 27, we previewed the Palace game, Crystal Palace Arsenal. So we're going to go ahead and review that game. Crystal Palace fell to the mighty Arsenal 3-1. So we're going to talk about that. Also midweek, a couple days later, Arsenal took on Leeds in the EFL Capital One Credit Card Discover Cup, and we beat them 2-0 as well. So we're going to go ahead and go over that briefly too. And then we're going to preview the showdown this Saturday. Arsenal will be traveling to King Power Stadium to play Leicester City. So that's going to be a great game. Two teams that are also trending in the right direction. So we're going to go ahead and talk about that, preview that, as well as get some questions in. You guys have been sending in questions. Thank you very much for the response. We're going to go ahead and try to get as many questions in as possible. So we do appreciate that. And anything else? That's pretty much it. That's pretty much what we're going to go through. So.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Actually, we actually, you know, we made a little booboo. It was actually Villa that we beat 3-1.
Oh, I said Palace, right? Oh, yeah. Yikes.
Yes, Aston Villa. That definitely just flew over my head. I'm like, wait, hold on.
Yeah.
I was like, damn, yo.
I still got the Palace game on my mind with the 2-2 draw.
I know.
Yes, Aston Villa. I apologize.
Better days, you know?
Yes, for sure. Better days now. So Aston Villa, that's what we're gonna go through first. Let's just get right to it then, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Let's just start with Villa. So after the Palace game, I personally think we were trending in the right direction, in terms of creating chances and goal scoring opportunities and things like that. And I think the Villa game was a culmination of that. So let's get into the starting lineup. So back line was almost unchanged. We have Ramsdale and goal, Tomiyasu on the right, Ben White paired with Gabriel in the center back position, and Nuno Tavares with his, is this his first start of the season? Or didn't he started against Brentford, didn't he? No, he came on against Brentford. So I think it's his first start of the season, right? First EPL start of the season.
Yeah.
Nuno Tavares on the left. KT had a bit of a knock, so he was not featured in the squad at all. Partey and Lokonga in the double pivot, as per. And the front three looked a little different, right?
Can you say it was a front three?
It was more than three, but, I mean, we're looking at the 4-2-3-1 formation we're playing. So, Sambi and Partey in the double pivot. So, NBC had it as Saka on the right, Smith Rowe on the 10, Aubameyang on the left, and Lacazette up front.
I wouldn't say we actually went to a 4-4-2 in this game.
Correct. I would say that too as well. So it really all depends on who you ask.
I could see why they kind of
pregame
said it was a why they said that. But
correct. But
if you watched the game,
it was a bit different. You could even argue. You could argue that it was because who scored has it as a 4-2-3-1 as well, but who scored has it as Smith Rowe on the left, Saka on the right, Aubameyang up top, and Lacazette in the 10. So I think
that's weird.
I think I actually think that's how we lined up defensively. Like when you see we don't have the ball. I mean, I tend to look at formations when we don't have the ball. How do we see it as how we line up when, and I don't mean just in our half, but just when we're starting to press or counter press, however we line up when we don't have the ball, I think is how we're going to be playing most of the game. And if you watch most of the game when we don't have the ball, Aubameyang led the press from the start. Smith Rowe more or less of the time was on the left, and majority of the game he spent on the left. And if you look at his heat map, and then Lacazette was behind in the 10, kind of pulling the strings. So I think it was really more that. I think it was really more, and most people could, you could call it a 4-4-2 as well, right? You could, it's easily, you could say Smith on the left, Rosak on the right, Partey and Lacanga, and Aubameyang and Lacazette both up top with Lacazette playing as a second striker, or is, you know, still as a 10 or you, whatever you want to call it, kind of in that Griezmann role for France, right? When Giroud's up top and Griezmann's kind of that second striker. But whatever you want to call it, Lacazette and Aubameyang were on the field together, which makes me happy. Like this is what brings joy to my Arsenal footballing.
And not to cut you off, I actually feel like this was the first time that they were on the field where it kind of like worked. Not like if you kind of understand, I can't say that Aubameyang, you know, wasn't close to Lacazette. You know how, I want to say maybe last season when they would be starting, but Lacazette and Aubameyang would be just like super far from each other, and you know, obviously
playing that, together. I think
I feel like it was because Aubameyang was dropping off too deep, you know, helping defensively. But like I felt like the way he's pressing now, it helps him not have to drop as deep, if that makes sense.
Go ahead.
That's my
agree with you on the whole dropping deep thing. I think that's why this works. This is one of the very few times that we've seen them play together and not have Lacazette in the nine and Aubameyang on the left. I mean them putting them on the field together, period, where they can combine together is has always been our best our best attack. It's always been our best goal scoring threat since they've been here. Since Emery's been here, since the last year that Wenger got here, when Aubameyang was you know, came into the team and was on fire coming straight from Dortmund. Whenever they're on the field together, we win games. I mean, I just don't. They carried us to Europa League final. I still remember, you know, traveling to Valencia and Aubameyang's hat trick, or Lacazette's free kick against Napoli. Like it's always been. In the big games, in the last few years, whenever we've been successful going forward, it's been with those two guys. So, I do think that Emery's gotten it wrong, Arteta's gotten it wrong at certain points by putting them on the field at different, you know, in different roles. And me and you, when we went to go watch the preseason game in North Carolina a couple years back, and we saw Lacazette play the 10 for a little bit. I remember seeing that and saying, why don't we do that more? And I think obviously because Ozil was there at the time, but he was kind of still being like half frozen out. This was the last year Emery was there, correct? If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
So, you know, this is right in the middle of that. So there's a lot of controversy around that and stuff like that. But I've always wondered, like, why not just play him? If that's how he plays anyways, you might as well just play him in the 10 and play Aubameyang up top and let him be. And let that way you get the best of both worlds, right? You still get. You get what you get from Aubameyang being in the box and searching for goals. You get him being able to drift out wide still and help and play on the left and be comfortable where he can go at players 1v1 and ESR can kind of drift into that middle, or they can combine together, which we've seen worked, right? We saw that today, and I've always just wondered why Lacazette looks the most comfortable in that role anyways, playing off of a striker, getting stuck in, doing the dirty work that Aubameyang just doesn't really like to do, right, with his back to goal. So why not just get the best of both of them? And I think the reason why we're seeing that now is for two reasons. One, because ESR can do the other job, right? Now we have someone capable on the left. We don't have to stick Saka on the left where he's a little bit less comfortable, right? We can put Saka on the right and keep him on in his most comfortable position. We can play ESR on the left because last couple of years we just had to play Aubameyang there because we had nobody else there on the left that we can put. So we can put him there, and Partey's fit now. Partey and Sambi are two guys that can run the double pivot and not have to worry about the speed of play, winning your 1v1s, kind of the things we had to worry about with Xhaka and Partey, or Xhaka just by himself, right? So I think now that you have that, you can afford to put Lacazette there because, A, you know Lacazette's going to work, right? You know he's going to help out defensively in the midfield. You know he's going to try to win his one-on-one battles. And you know that he at this point, has been the central hub of our creativeness. And, yes, we have Odegaard there, but Odegaard doesn't and we're going to talk about Odegaard too a bit, but I don't think he offers the same thing Lacazette does in terms of the work rate and in terms of just the little dark arts, like getting fouls and kind of knowing when to slow the game down, things like that veterans do very well. And he's been a part of this league for a long time. A good amount of time he's been in the Premier League compared to Odegaard, right? So, you know, I honestly think we should have did this against Brighton. We should have had him there too. I think Odegaard struggled in those games because this is the first time he's played against these teams in the Premier League that are a bit more bulkier, that have a lot less finesse about them and more robust. And I think Odegaard just has to get used to that. You know what I mean? And I think once he does, that sky's the limit, right?
But I was gonna say I kind of want to, you know, I feel like I want to treat him like how we did Ozil, even though obviously Ozil did, you know, his thing. Mm-hmm. First got that he was getting his assist and whatnot. But I feel like Odegaard needs, you know, that one full season to kind of get used mm-hmm. to the
Premier League. League. And he was here, to be fair, last year, but he came in pretty late.
I mean, he got a half a season.
Yeah, he got half a season, and he was hurt for a little bit. Yeah, for sure.
I feel like if he has the full season now, you know, and he can put on, I honestly think he needs to put on maybe like a couple, like 5 to 10 pounds maybe,
mm-hmm.
So he can deal with the physicality of the league.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, obviously that comes with, you know, him just playing games. But I think by the end of the season, he should be, you know, finally hitting stride and
yeah,
looking how we expected him to look.
For sure.
Or even how he looked kind of, you know, at the end of last season where he was kind of helping us out with when we were on our low win streak and whatnot. So
mm-hmm. I agree with that. I think it was just Matt, and I think this is the perfect timing though, right? Give him the break, let him just kind of, you know, let him go at his pace. He doesn't have any pressure because now you have Lacazette you put there. You know what I mean? Because imagine if we didn't have that and we'd have to just kind of pressure him to get this right away, like we're kind of doing with the back line, right?
Yep.
So it's kind of a good thing that we don't have to shoehorn him in so quickly. But let's get into the game. So the Villa lineup, right? We didn't do that, right?
Do we have to? All right, I'm
yeah.
not going to do that again.
Yeah, we definitely have to. We are reviewing the game, sir, so we should be doing this. well, it's important, too, as well, because we, you know, who we have in goal making his first appearance back, right? And, well, that's first appearance. Is it second appearance, right?
I want to say second. I think we played him in last season.
Yeah. So, Emi Martinez in goal, who, I mean, to be fair, had a pretty decent game. He kind of kept them. It could have been more if it wasn't for him. Yeah. And he saved the penalty, which we'll talk about. Konsa, Tunzebi, and Tyrone Mings in the back. So they played a 3-5-2. 3-5-2, 3-4-1-2, whatever you want to call it. Is that Matty Cash on the right? Yeah. Again, Luis and a Target. In the midfield, right across the midfield on the left. Then he had Mbendia in the 10, Danny Ings, and Ollie Watkins up top. Now, Ollie Watkins has a great goal-scoring return against Arsenal these last, I think, two seasons, right? I think he's had 4 goals in, like, 3 games or something like that. Some wild stat. So he was one of their danger guys. But
We're going to talk about him, you know, in a little bit as we go on. But
Watkins?
Yeah, I want to ask you couple questions, but
okay,
you
know, yeah, I'm gonna talk about it. Well, so let's just go over the game real quick. So from minute number one, I think we were on the front foot, and I was really, really, really happy about that. Since we've had the back line and everything, we definitely, I feel like we've started games much better than we had in recent seasons. I think the last 3-4 games we've started, we've dictated the level of play, and from minute number one, you saw that things were happening. I think the first minute was when Ollie Watkins and and Gabriel kind of tangled up a bit, and Watkins kind of threw him down, and what I loved to see was all of our Arsenal players running up to the ref and basically trying to get this guy carded. I loved it because it looked like we were after it. It looked like we weren't gonna get pushed around, and what I love about this back line is we do the bullying, which is great. I can't tell you the last time I've had a back line that I could say we're bullying players like Harry Kane and Watkins and these top strikers. Before, these strikers love coming to play Arsenal. You know what I'm saying? Like in the recent seasons before we've changed this back line, strikers loved going up against Mustafi and Rob Holding and all these guys. They loved it. They loved it because they knew they had space. They knew they could bully us. And I think from minute number one, you could see the difference between then and now. You know what I mean? And I think we were able to kind of get in Ollie Watkins' head and Danny Ings' head just by going to the ref, talking to the ref, getting flustered. And I think most of the game was pretty much like that for him. And from then, we just kind of pressed. I think the first big chance came from Saka on the left, playing it over to Aubameyang, who tried to do the bicycle kick. Which, to be fair, I've seen him score it before. I've seen him do it. You know what I'm saying? I've seen him do it.
That's all he could have done, though. That's the angle that it was at, and how far it was behind him.
I think, but yeah, but he also turned. He turned his whole body though.
Yeah, but it's behind him. He had to. He had no choice.
It was in front of him. It's behind him because he turned his body. That's why it was behind him. I'm watching it right now. The ball was hung up, and then it was going towards the back post. I'm looking at it. Aubameyang looking at Emmy right now. Aubameyang turns his entire body to try and do the bike. What he could have did was he could have tried to play it across. As soon as the ball kind of flipped it over, Lacazette's darting over into the box. He could have headed it back over to Lacazette.
Yeah.
But listen, like I said, I don't mind him trying it. I don't mind him trying it. But you're in a six. So my issue is if you don't get it off perfectly, it's going to look like that. And it went right back over to Saka, who also made a meal of that too, because Saka could have probably brought that down. And yeah, but actually looking at it now, he definitely could have brought it down in hindsight. But I don't mind him. Yeah, I don't mind him trying to hit it first. You're in the six. You know, you got to be decisive. So, and that was the third minute in. But at that point, I said, ooh, I was doing the Birdman hand rub. I was like, ooh. <That's funny. laughs> I was like, ooh. So, and the rest of the time, I mean, Smith Rowe combining a lot with Lacazette. Tomiyasu took a couple shots that went to range, but let's get right into the first goal. I mean, this is a sustained pressure for 15, 20 minutes. We get a corner kick, played over by Smith Rowe. Very good corner. As you can see, we've changed a lot of our corner kick tactics. So now we got three, four guys in the box, in the six, right on Emmy. Right in the line, and then we had two guys with, I think, Tomiyasu and Gabriel making runs into the six. So it's like a darting run into the six, and just chaos, a bunch of chaos. And Partey, Thomas Partey. Off,
but it's kind of crazy that you can see, like, our set pieces and how they look now once we got the set piece.
Oh my
coach.
Gosh, bro!
It's actually night and day.
Oh my gosh!
Like it's night and day, bro.
It's crazy.
So I'm actually happy. I'm actually happy with that. With the signing of that coach.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, other teams are doing it. Liverpool does it. I think City has one. City might have been the first to get one.
This guy just came from City.
Yeah,
he just came from City.
So I'm with it, man. I'm with it. Yeah, but,
I'm not mad at it either, bro.
But Thomas Partey gets his head onto it. First goal. First goal for Partey, which I called. You guys can go back into the podcast. Yep, I did call Partey scoring.
You did. I'll give you that one.
And, you know, good goal for him. He's been wanting it, man. He's been wanting it. And,
he deserves it, though.
He's been playing very well. Very, very well. And then a couple minutes later, so 1-0 to the Arsenal. A couple minutes later, people forgot about this, too. We get on the break, and Smith Rowe plays the ball over to Nuno Tavares, and Tavares plays a beautiful, I think it was the first time pass, like, you know, he took a touch first, but a beautiful ball across the box to Saka. At the end of the, who's on the far post, and Saka by himself 1v1 tried to take it first time on the right foot, and Martinez beautiful save. Like, oh my goodness, hits at it. And to be fair, Saka tries to play it, kind of plays it a little square, like centrally, but it's because, you know, the momentum is bringing it over to the right side of the box. So Martinez dives to his right, and Saka tries to play it back across the ball, across the goal, and Martinez makes a save with his foot. And this is in the box. This is 1v1. Like, this is a definitely, and if we're looking at XG, this is an expected goal for sure. And Martinez just keeps him at 1-0. And I just said to myself, man, like, if it wasn't for Martinez, this, it could be 2 or 3-0 today, right now, or, you know, in the first half. And one thing I will say is we have improved game after game on the break, because a lot of counterattacks have been stalling against Norwich when we won 1-0, against Palace even 2. And it just looks game after game after game after game. We're just improving in specific areas. And this is, like I said, it's a young team, the youngest team in the Premier League, if I'm not mistaken, and one of the youngest teams in Europe with Barcelona. So game, you know, every, and without a full proper preseason, right? This starting 11 has not had a preseason game, right? So this is the first time they're playing together, really, essentially. You know what I mean? As a unit, and to improve on these things week in, week out, it speaks to the level of commitment that the players have, but it also speaks about the manager. It speaks a lot about the manager, and we're gonna talk about that too after. But right before halftime, Lacazette gets a penalty, and you know, we talked about the dark arts and getting stuck in, and that's a big difference between him and maybe an Odegaard. Maybe Odegaard doesn't get a penalty there. Maybe he doesn't stick his foot there. And just for context for the podcast purposes, Saka plays a ball over into the box. The player gets broken up from, I think, Tyrone Mings, and Lacazette sticks his foot in front of the defender. I think it's McGinn, if I'm not mistaken, right before he tries to clear the ball. He gets caught up, and it's a penalty. I mean, the VAR reviewed it. It looked like he got a piece of the ball, but penalty for you? And we're not just saying this because we're Arsenal fans.
Nah, I just,
you know, partially. I'm saying it partially because I'm Arsenal.
Yeah, but I
it's a penalty. It's a penalty. Like, now let me ask you this, and I was listening to Ars blog the other day, and he made a good point. One of the ways that he regards as a penalty was, if it had happened to us, would you have felt hard done? Like, would you have felt like, damn, or would you have been like, yeah, that's a penalty?
Yeah, that's a penalty, in my opinion.
Okay, I mean, it's, I gotta ask questions. You know what I mean?
I could see why, you know.
Yeah, I could see Villa being a bit mad about it. You know what I'm saying? I could see it. But it's a penalty. We have gotten far worse called on us. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, exactly, you know what I'm saying? Yep. So that, just off of that, off of the strength there, that, you know what I mean? I'm with that. So Aubameyang steps up. Now, let me ask you this question. Should Aubameyang have taken the penalty?
Nah, I wanted Lacazette to take it.
I'm glad you said it.
At this point in time, I was talking to one of my friends, and I was like, Lacazette hasn't missed a PK for us yet.
I took the words right from me. Right from
legit him. Hasn't missed a PK from us yet. So I said, he needs to take it. But I was thinking to myself, and I was like, okay, maybe he was feeling the contact a little bit.
That's another thing that we got, shout out to Arch Blog. That's another thing that James and them were talking about. Like, sometimes, I think Thierry Henry had said it too, that he never takes the penalty that he's fallen for, because, you know, if you're hurt or maybe you're feeling it, you know what I mean? Or whatever. Because it looked kind of like, from what they were saying, it looked like Aubameyang was kind of looking for Lacazette to take the penalty. But I think it said Lacazette handed him the ball, if I'm not mistaken. Something like that. You know how those guys are. You know what I mean? So, you know, I think if he felt like he wanted to take it, Aubameyang would. I feel Aubameyang would have given it to him personally.
Yeah.
You know, so. But even still, the penalty was a good penalty. He tried to put it in the corner. He put it at a good height. And look, is Emmy one of the best penalty savers in the world? Like PK savers in the world? Can we say that now? He's won a couple shootouts.
I'm gonna say he's really good.
I'm just saying one of the best. I can't say he's the best. I'm saying you could make an argument and say top PK goalkeeper or top penalty savers in the world. You could say that at this point in time. Yeah. just judging off of the amount of penalties he's been able to save and PK shootouts that he's won. I think he's a solid goalkeeper. He's a good goalkeeper. I mean, at the end of the day, he's a solid goalkeeper. And we got good money from him, thankfully. And now we got arguably England number one, hopefully, putting it out there in the universe right now. So, and we have Germany's number three, or, you know what I'm saying? So, like, what's the problem here? You know what I'm saying? Like, at the end of the day, how good Emmy is or not, and again, I'm going to say it one more time, shout out to Ari Blog. I was listening to their pod, too, about it, too. And he made a good point. Like, after Emmy's been in the club for like a decade. And out of that decade, we can argue that he's probably been the best keeper at the club for less than 1 year out of those 10 years. Maybe less than one. Maybe. And that's still an argument, because it was hard for me to say he was better than Leno over 8 games. Right? So, and even if he outperformed him over those 8 games, Emmy's been not the best keeper at our club for majority of the time he's been there. And he's gone on loans. Some of the loans are good, some of them were not good. I think he got really good at a very good time in his career. That's what I think happened. I think he and that just happens with goalkeepers. They hit their stride later on in their careers, and maybe he hit his stride just now at a good time, and we were able to sell him for $30 million, right? Or 25, or however much we sold him for. And I think it's good business. At the end of the day, he went out, he furthers his career. He's one of the best keepers in the Premier League right now. Amazing. Guess what? We got another one. So it wasn't even like we found that, and Leno put us in a situation, but we got out of it. Aaron Ramsdale is an exceptional goalkeeper. I did not think that we were going to, I honestly was very skeptical about this at the very start of the season. And we're 3 months into the season now, right? Or August of the year, about 3 months into the season. And I am not at all skeptical anymore. I can change my mind when faced with new information. And this new information right here tells me I am 100% happy with Aaron Ramsdale. I think he will become one of the best goalkeepers in the Premier League. And I think he has the ceiling to become the best goalkeeper in the Premier League. If it happens, I don't know. If it happens, will we remain to be seen? What I'm saying is his ceiling is that. If you would have told me, yo, this guy, Aaron Ramsdale from Sheffield United in July, his ceiling could be one of the best goalkeepers in the Premier League. I'd have said you were nuts. I'd have been like, no way. There's no way. Nothing shows me that he could be the best goalkeeper, one of the best in the Premier League. After 3 months of seeing him, though, here, I'm justified in feeling that way now. So I think we have a good one on our hands. But anyways, back to the penalty. Good save, right, by Emmy. Aubameyang puts it to Emmy's right, puts a little bit of height on it. It's going into the corner. He makes a great save. However, I think because Aubameyang put it so high, he was able to get the rebound, because the rebound went right to him. And he still has a lot to do after that rebound, right? Yeah. To put it into the net on his left foot, and he's able to do that very well. So, and he was able to put it away, and 2-0 to the Arsenal. And Emmy's like about to cry on the floor. Remember, that was like he lost Copa America or something like that. Like
Emmy was sick at that.
He was sick. He was sick because he made the save. He made the save. To be fair, he did make the save. And I hate to say it, but I kind of thought he was gonna save it.
I said the same thing, bro. I can't remember who I was talking to, because I said, "Dang!" I literally was like, "Yo, Lacazette's gonna take it, and I feel like he's gonna score."
Yeah, I think Laka scores. Mm-hmm.
And you know, I was like, "Damn, you know, let's go. We're about to be 2-0 up." And then I saw Aubameyang take it. I said, "Ah, Aubameyang's pretty good, but like he's missed before.
He's missed a couple."
And the thing is, as I said that, and you already see, you know, if you know Emmy, when you watch him,
yep, he always started the gamesmanship.
Yeah, he likes to start talking crap,
the foolishness,
and he likes to start. You know,
I think Lacazette had pushed him or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, of course,
was trying to get him away. Yeah,
and that's why when he did that, I said, "Okay, good, Lacazette's gonna take it because he's mm-hmm. right there." And then that's when I seen Aubameyang step up. I said,
yeah."
I guess, yeah, but I wasn't confident either. I
would have
rather Lacazette taking it.
And on top of that, like Emmy's watch. I would have liked to see like somebody brand new, like Ben White or somebody, do it. Like, cause like Emmy's had years of saving, and you know, second goalkeepers. That's what they do in practice. Of course, they're on penalty duties. You get what I'm saying?
Penalties, so free kicks.
They know all about these guys. So yeah. I would have been happy with, you know, Ben Schwite or something. imagine Ben White going to go taking the medal. That would have been vibes for sure. So we go into the halftime. 2-0, and we're gonna quickly go through the second half of this so we can get into the other stuff. But I mean, the game was pretty much ours at that point. Around the 52nd minute, Sambi Lokonga had a decent chance too, where he kind of ran through a couple players. But the third goal I want to talk about around the 54th minute, and this may have been what gave Smith Rowe the man of the match for me, possibly. You know, he's back defending, helping out Nuno Tavares. He cuts out a pass. Right around the 20-yard line, right around about maybe 10 yards past the 18. So let's call it 30 yards into our half. Plays the ball to Sambi, then just goes. Like, he just takes off. He just takes off, right? And from he plays it to Sambi, he just knows, oh, counter's on. So Sambi plays it down to Nuno. And to be fair, Nuno also plays a great ball.
Yo, a really good ball. A lot of people weren't giving him the – I'm like, yo, the
That's
ball
a good
from Nuno
– That's a very, very good ball. As a left back, that's the ball that you play to get out of trouble, right? And to be fair,
wasn't it with his right foot too?
No, it was his left. It was his left.
Okay, I was about to say, he gave that pass with his weak foot. Oh.
But no, he is weak foot. He got five stars. His weak foot is legit. I think it's better than Tierney's weak foot, to be fair. And Tierney scored on his right foot. Remember, he scored that banger last year in the snow on the right foot.
I think Nuno's right foot is way better.
Yeah. So he plays the ball hard, nice driven pass to Aubameyang, who plays that back flick right over to and to be fair, he's done this a few times too. That's probably one of the best things Aubameyang does when he plays up front in terms of the hold up play. Those little flicks. And that just completely depletes, I think, Matt Cash or whoever that is. And ESR also does great to take that first touch off of, on his head, right? So that ball comes in, and Aubameyang, even though the flick was a really good flick, is a little high, right? So, but because of the spin, he was able to kind of stay in front. The ball was able to stay in front of ESR, and he plays that, you know, he touches it right on his head to get another good touch on it, composes himself a little bit, and gets... Lucky. Get some help. He gets some luck. To be fair, but listen, you got to put yourself in a position to be lucky, right? I don't remember what coach told me that back in the day, but you know, shout outs to him. But you got to put yourself in a position to be lucky, and being able to be so direct and get into the box. And he tries to. And to be fair, Smith Emmy reads that he's trying to go far post. So had he given him the eyes, he probably could have put it near post. But hits off of Tyrone Mings. And you know, goes right into the inside of the post, and it's 3-0. Thanks for playing. You know, it's been real. It's been fun. It ain't been real fun for y'all. So, after that point, I think we kind of went into the shell, which we do. We do sometimes because I can't blame the team for not being able to manage leads very well, because we haven't had very many leads this season, right? Yeah. How many times has this team played together where we've been up 3-0? Not many. I mean, to be fair, with Tottenham probably. But, you know, we've had a couple chances that Ramsdale came up big on. They introduced Bailey into the game, and Bailey was really direct going at Nuno. Nuno's tired legs, and he was their most dangerous player, I think, personally.
Very well,
he did. To be fair, they probably should have put him on earlier. At 2-0, that they put him on at 2-0, they probably had a chance. And pretty right around sure, the 81st,
like, first or second dribble, he got like a bust somebody sideline. I said, yo, my gosh.
I think that was Nuno. It might have been Nuno. Yeah, might have been Nuno. It's tough. It'd be like that sometimes. But around that 81st, 82nd minute, again, Bailey gets the ball, top of the box. Good first touch. He kind of skips around Nuno and Sambi. And then Gabriel goes to step. It looks kind of like that Saka maybe on the right that is a little asleep. But Ramsey was really on the top of the box, right at the semicircle of the box. Kind of just waiting to get the ball, and nobody's there. It looks like Odegaard and Saka are probably the two closest to him, but kind of nobody steps to him. Gabriel steps to kind of challenge challenge Bailey. And to be fair, I mean, that is a finish by Ramsey. He puts that, he puts the postage stamp right on there. You know, nothing Ramsdale could do. And it sucks because Ramsdale, like I say, such a good keeper. And I wish he would have got the clean sheet today because I think he deserved it. But there's been some good goals that scored on him, to be fair. He's not letting in, he's not letting in some goals that you got to question. There's been some decent goals that have scored. So Ramsey puts it, you know, upper 90, top corner. It's 3-1 at 82nd minute. Gives them a little bit of a pulse. A little bit. And I think it did it deflect? Did it look like a deflection?
Nah, it was not.
Nah, yeah, he put that in the corner.
And the crazy thing about it, he almost had a second one.
Yeah, he did right after that.
I said, this man has his shooting boots on today.
And then Ramsdale kind of just shored things up. Bailey goes for the free kick. That also wasn't a bad free kick to either as well. He's going to have a good season, man. I think we was it me and you that spoke? And I said, I said between him and Sancho, I think he's going to have the better season at the start of the season. I think between me and him, because I said both of them are gonna take. I said it's dependent upon how both of them react to the pace of the Premier League. Remember how Havertz, it took Havertz some time. It took Timo some time. Yeah. Germany is just not like, just the pace is just not. You have way less space here than you do in Germany. And even in France too as well, which is why Pepe, you know, which we're gonna get to too as well, struggled a bit when he first got here too. So and I just figured though that Bailey just has a bit more end product than Sancho does, in terms of goals, and even though Sancho's shifty and things like that, and also Bailey's in a team where he can express himself probably a little bit more than Sancho would at United. So as of right now, I mean, who knows what's going to happen in the other half of the season, but as of right now, it's looking like Bailey. And but I digress. Game ends 3-1. Who do you have in the match?
Probably Smith Rowe. Between him and him and Partey, I think.
Partey had a very, very good game too.
I'd say it's between them two.
Yeah. Smith Rowe, just for context, 2 shots, 1 on target, 1 goal, 4 key passes, 3 dribbles, no offsides, 1 dispossessed 1 time, and 1 bad touch. Then we have 1 tackle, 2 interceptions. And his passing stats, 4, like I said, 4 key passes, 54 passes, 85% pass accuracy, 3 crosses, 1 accurate 1, and 1 through ball. I mean, 1 long ball. So, I mean, those are great, great numbers. You know what I mean? Especially playing out wide in a wide attacking mid role. I'd agree with you. Partey, 82% pass accuracy, 52 passes. 4 long balls, 1 accurate. Let's look at this. 3 total tackles, led the team in tackles. 2 clearances, and was fouled 1 time. 0 times dispossessed, which is probably the best stat you could say for Thomas Partey, who had been struggling on that lately, correct? Yep. So, yeah, I think it's between them two. I think it's worth noting that Ben White has had his second really good game in a row. I think Palace, he made it, he could have did a bit better on that goal. So I wouldn't say really good. I'd say he had a decent, I'd say Palace game was good, decent to good. I think this game was better. I think, looking at it, I think he led the team in pass accuracy. Yeah. 95% on 37 passes, 3 long balls, 2 of them were accurate. Defensively, he didn't have any recorded tackles because I don't think he had to do too much. 1 interception and 3 clearances and 2 block shots. Led the team in block shots. He was able to get stuck in, which I guess is almost a tackle in a sense, but, you know, whatever. Semantics. What I am impressed with, though, which they didn't put in, was he should have had, like, 3 dribbles because he dribbled past, like, 6 people, like, at one time, right? And that's something, and then we even saw him do that a bit. They gave him, I guess they gave him credit for one of them, but I guess, because I guess it was 1 dribbling action, I guess you can call it, but 0 times dispossessed, 1 bad touch, I guess you could say bad touch, but commanding his area, I think that's one of the main concerns I think a center back should be worried about is how do you command your area? And I think in his area, none of the real action items happened, right? They weren't like going down his side of the lot. They weren't. He just was every time the ball got to him, he was really calm on the ball. He brings a level of security to our back line at 23 years old that I think, or 24, that I think we just didn't have in the past. And I
think he is 23.
23? Yeah, 23. And just his ability to, like I said, with his, he's very good on the ball as a center back. Very, very good on the ball. And, you know, his ability to get the ball from the back line and dribble through four or five players to the center of the park is a very useful skill that a lot of center backs cannot do. The top center backs do that. When Virgil does that, people are in awe. When De Ligt did that and Frenkie de Jong did that in Ajax in the Dutch league, in a league that is far less pacey than our league, right? People were in awe. People said, yeah, they're worth $100 million. Granted, they did that at 18 and 19 years old. But Ben doing that here is not something every center back can do. A lot of center back, you know, when Ruben Diaz does it, everyone says he's world class. When Virgil does it, everyone says he's world class. You know what I'm saying? And these guys are world class, to be fair, those two guys. So when getting Ben White and his ability to do that, if he can do that consistently and build attacks and from doing that, I think that transfer looks like a good transfer. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, there's still a long way to go, but I like what I'm seeing, and I think he had a very good performance against a Villa team that absolutely smashed us last year. Remember? Smashed us last year. Granted, they had Jack Grealish, but Ollie Watkins was a nuisance for us last year. It was difficult for us to handle, and he was pocketed. Him and Danny Ings, one of the best English strikers in our game, right? Pocketed by Ben White and Gabriel. Harry Kane, best striker in England. Best English striker in the country, pocketed by Ben White and Gabriel. When do we start giving them their credit for doing this? And I know it's early, and we have a big test coming up with Leicester with another one of the top strikers in England. But as of right now, these guys are putting out impressive performances. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I do. I do want to see how they do against Vardy, because he just seems to be Arsenal's kryptonite, but
true.
I agree 100%. I do feel like they should start, you know, getting the recognition that they deserve. I was actually talking to one of my buddies the other day, saying that Gabriel is gonna get his first Brazil call up real soon, because the way he's playing this year is pretty good, bro. Like, not pretty good, really good.
Yep.
And I think he's gonna get that call up very soon. So, he might not, you know, be the starter yet. I think if he continues to have the season he's having now, he can make a case for himself. But I do think he will get his, you know, his first senior team call up very soon.
Listen, I'm so glad you said that, because we've had conversations. I've had a lot of conversations with plenty of people. And I said, listen, I know it's early, but we watch a lot of football. Mm-hmm. And I can, you know, I'm all with positive affirmations and manifesting, and I'm all for that now. I've never been that type of guy, but I'm super fine with putting this out there that I could see half our team participating in the World Cup next year. I can see Aaron Ramsdale being the starting keeper for England at one point. I could see Ben White being a starting center back for England at one point. And hopefully next year, I can see Gabriel being a part of the Brazil national team. I can see Lokonga coming off the bench for Belgium. I can see Saka being a big part of the team. He's already a part of that team. I can see Thomas Partey participating and carrying his country to a World Cup. I can see Odegaard competing, you know, with captaining his team. I see a lot of this, man. I see a lot of this. I see what we're building here, and. I don't care if it's on the hush-hush. We can keep this between us in camp. You know what I'm saying? I don't care if the rest of the world doesn't see this yet. But what we're building here compared to where we were a year ago today is a huge step, in my opinion. And I think we are trending in the right direction. And look, we're gonna lose games. It's gonna happen. We're not there yet. And if we lose to Leicester, I don't want us to lose our shit. You know what I'm saying? I don't want us to go back into the same old Arsenal. I don't want that to happen. Because Leicester is ahead of us in terms of where they are as a team. They've been together for a couple years, and they have one of the best players in the Premier League with Yuri Tielemans, with Ndidi, and with Jamie Vardy. Ricardo is a really good right back. I mean, they have a good team. James Maddison, you know, who we were you know longing after, that's worth 80 million to them. You know, they have a great team. So, you know, we're looking to get to that point. We're looking to get to the point where we're right outside of European contention as they were last year, and trying to get into the top four. We're trying to get to that point. We're not there yet, but we're getting there. Every single game, it looks like we're getting there. So if things work out the way that they're supposed to work out, and we build off of this, you know, we're close. We're close. We're close to this rebuild coming, you know, I think we're halfway through that almost, if you look at it. You know, the other half is the midfield and the attacking three and what we look at next year. I think next summer is going to be just as important as last summer. But the last summer, this is the foundation. You know, we've built the foundation now. This is it. And you know, two years, I would love to see 26-year-old Ben White with 25, 26-year-old Gabriel with 26-year-old KT with 26-year-old Tamiyasu with you know, maybe if works out with Saliba, 22, 23-year-old Saliba off the bench or on the field, yeah, with 25, 26-year-old Aaron Ramsdale. I would love to see that. 23, 24-year-old Lokonga, 23, 24-year-old ESR Saka. Those could be world class players. You see what I'm saying? So I mean, I'm not mad at this. I'm not mad at this at all. And I'm glad that so early on it's working, because I didn't think it was gonna happen this quickly. I thought it was gonna take us some time. I didn't think in terms of the rebuild, but I'm just in terms of showing signs that we're playing, that we can play at the top level, and that these players individually are good enough. I thought it was going to take a lot longer for these guys to mature into the league, and right now they look like they're maturing game by game, and it's going to take longer for us to see the full repayment of the investment that we've made, but we're on the track. We're definitely trending in the right direction for sure.
I agree.
So yeah, man of the match. I think I'm going ESR as well, or Partey. Very good match from both of them. Ben White is probably in the third for me, just because, like I said, I think he's had a very good performance. When you can keep quiet, Ollie Watkins and Danny Ings. There's not a lot of teams that can do that. You know what I'm saying? I don't think they sniffed a big chance. But the goal that they scored had nothing to do with them. You see what I'm saying? And that's what you want. You want your center backs to have the two, you know, two very good goal scoring center forwards, both of them. Like I said, these are guys that usually play by themselves. Danny Ings is usually by himself up top, right? And Ollie Watkins can operate that. These are two guys that together can give you 25 goals. You know what I'm saying? So keeping those guys quiet is more than a decent performance for me. I think that's a solid performance from Ben White. So let's move on. Let's go over briefly the Leeds game. So midweek, we went to go play Leeds. Well, Leeds came to us for the EFL Cup. Was that the fourth round? Fourth round of EFL Cup? Yeah, fourth round EFL Cup. I was quite confident that we were going to see a change side, obviously considering we have a big game against Leicester coming up on Saturday. So I definitely didn't disappoint. Real quick, the lineups for that was Leno in goal, who's actually been playing great. Shout out to Leno, because he could have pouted. He could have just been like, oh, I lost my spot, I don't want to play no more. And I've seen it, right? We've seen it. We've seen these guys respond badly to getting benches, you know, to getting benched and stuff like that. And he has not. He has kept his level up, his professionalism up. Well, I think he might have gotten man of the match, if I'm not mistaken. According to WhoScore, he had man of the match. I don't know if he like literally got it from the EFL. You know, they usually give the award out or whatever. but Leno in goal, went same 4-2-3-1. Cedric Soares at right back. Ben White, who I was kind of surprised started, and who came off too with a bit of an injury or some sickness, or some issues. Rob Holding in left center back, Kolasinac at left back. The double pivot of Elneny and Maitland-Niles, and Pepe on the right, Smith Rowe in the 10, Martinelli on the left, and Eddie Ntekki up top. What do you think about the lineup?
Expected.
Even ESR, though?
I mean, you can't really, you know, you can't. Maybe could have switched. Well, I guess Odegaard was hurt, so I guess that's probably why he started. I think yeah, Odegaard probably same. Would have started if he didn't pick up the little injury. I think that maybe would have been the only change. And then, of course, Ben White with Pablo Mari, you know, that he picked up the little bug.
Yeah.
You know, midweek. But that's how I expected us to play. Maybe Chambers instead of Cedric Suarez, but I mean that's like a toss up in my opinion. For right now,
I'm fine with Cedric too, considering we're playing an attacking team.
To be fair though, like Cedric has been playing, you know, pretty decent, you know, as the backup whenever True. He got his chance. So I'm not mad at it, to be honest with you. I expected that lineup. I'm just, you know, I'm glad they performed.
Facts.
To be honest with you, because this was a pretty strong lineup from Leeds. I mean, they had everyone there as a starter. I think the only person that I don't really recognize is their center mid, Forshaw. I feel like they start the other guy. I forgot his name. Klitsch?
Yeah. Well, let's go with the formation. Let's go over Leeds real quick. So Messier. French goalkeeper. He's young too, right? He's a pretty young guy.
I think he's like 20.
Yeah,
pretty young. He's 21.
Dallas on the left, and I like Leeds. I watched a documentary, and you know, I was really into their club. You know, I'm glad that they, you know, Bielsa is a coach. I think he's a really good coach. Michel Sturic, Marc Laurent at center back. Those two guys.
Drama.
At right back, then we had Forshaw and Phillips, which I was kind of surprised that Calvin Phillips started in this game too.
He didn't. I think he's coming back off of injury. Oh, he didn't start over the weekend.
Okay. The double pivot, and you know he's one of the best center mids in the country as well.
Yeah, he's
Jack Harrison, former NYFC player too. City on the right,
technically,
you know. Man City and NYFC, I guess.
He was just on loan.
Tyler Roberts, also not a bad player too, in the 10, and former United player Daniel James and Swansea player Daniel James, who they've been trying to get for years, actually, funny enough, at left, and Rodrigo up front.
It's actually crazy that he actually was supposed to go to Leeds first.
Yeah, for sure. That's what I'm saying. It's kind of crazy, right?
Yeah. It's...
And Sam Greenwood, too. Shout out to Sam Greenwood, former Arsenal Academy player. Yeah. He actually was a sub. He was actually subbed on there, too, as well. And
should have stayed, big guy. You should have stayed.
Ben White also was a former Leeds player, too. He was on loan. Helped him go up. So, first half, all Arsenal again. Started out on the front foot. And it's a bit frustrating game for attacking front three. I think Pepe was trying a bit too much to force the hand, and it just wasn't coming off. I don't think he had one of his best games, but he still was able to get an assist. So the first goal, we're just going to kind of fast forward into the first goal. Ben White kind of got hurt. They said everything was okay, thankfully, but he subbed. He was able to come off for Callum Chambers in the 55th minute.
Said he was a bit ill.
Yeah, they said there was a bug going around, and that's why Odegaard didn't play as well. And that's why Pablo Mari didn't play.
Because I was
really surprised that Pablo not starting. I thought it was going to be Pablo and Rob. And they said, yeah, he may have gotten it. So as long as it's not COVID, then hopefully it'll be okay. Yep. So Callum Chambers comes on in the 55th minute, and right on as he comes on, first touch of the game, 23 seconds into him just getting subbed in, he scores a goal. Corner kick comes over. Did he win the initial header? Or I think it was Kolasinac that won the initial header.
It might have been Kolasinac.
And went over to Pepe, and Pepe actually really good presence of mind to head it back over on the right side of the six, right back over to Callum Chambers, who was able to head it on home. And to be fair, Messier actually did save it, but it was just, you know, he was right behind the line. It was tough. And thankfully, VAR, goal line technology, we were able to step in and intervene and give us a goal. So 1-0. Callum, great celebration, ran over to the bench. Looked like he probably said something to them, like, I'm about to go on and score or something like that. Yeah. You know, so they all kind of.
I think the set piece coach was saying that.
Yeah, or maybe the set piece coach was like probably pushing to get him on the field, right, or something like that.
I think so.
And either way, they all ran over to him, jumped on him, and it was just good scenes, good vibes. The team just looks a little more cohesive, right, than we had before. I don't know if it's just me. I don't know if it had a lot to do with Arteta and you know, saying the best part of his footballing, or the best days of his life was during, you know, the time we were getting pumped and getting killed by City and these teams. But, you know, I understand it, I guess, because, you know, that's when you see what your team is made for, right? Made of, right? When you're at the worst part and the bottom of team success and you feel like you're at your worst, that's when you see, you know, who's really in it and who's not in it, right? Who's going to fold and who's not going to fold. So I think that's kind of what he meant was, you know, the team responded to it. When we were losing and we looked like we were in relegation battle and everybody was doing the memes and all that stuff, the team responded because they knew we were better than this. And, you know, look where we're at now, right? We're unbeaten in five or six or something like that. And then fast forward to the 69th minute. I think it was Laurent had got subbed out at that time. Somebody, one of the center backs tried to play a back pass to Messier, and Eddie Ntekia ran it down, and actually, to be fair, did very well to kind of, you know, put it over the keeper's head, and first touch too to get it down was great. Makes a meal of the second touch and almost misses an open goal on literally on the line. But it goes in. And 2-0, and that's, you know, that's Eddie Ntekia in a nutshell, right? That's him. That if that entire play doesn't describe Eddie Ntekia, then I don't know what does, because he's the guy to score goals just like that, where it's almost like he almost messed it up, but his work rate and his, you know, his desire to get goals is kind of what keeps him in contention, I guess you could say, even though he's not really in contention. But like that's kind of the best things about him, right? That's his attributes. If you say, what does Eddie do best? It's that. It's his aggressiveness. It's his, you know, his aggression, his ability to make something out of nothing and to take his half chances. I think that's what it does too. Eddie, shout out to Eddie too, who's also a former Leeds player too as well. Leeds loaney. So a lot of back and forth between Arsenal and Leeds with these guys. A lot of former Arsenal guys playing for Leeds, former Leeds guys playing for Arsenal. It's actually pretty funny. But, yeah, that's pretty much it. I think man of the match, I'd probably give it to Leno. I think Leno had a really good game. Elneny played very well, too, to be fair. Did everything that was asked of him. But comfortable win, I would say. I thought they would be a little bit more... I thought they would put a little bit more chances. I thought they would create a bit more, considering they had decent front three. Between Rodrigo scores a lot of goals for them, or gets a lot of goal scoring opportunities. Daniel James, I think, may have, you know, since he just got there, I don't know if he's how good he's been, but he's another really good player. So I assume they were gonna test us a bit more, but we were comfortable the whole game, right? I don't remember us not being comfortable at all. But yeah, man of the match, I think I'm gonna go Leno. He just didn't really have much to do, you know. But yeah. If I'm not saying Leno, I probably would go. I guess maybe give it to Callum because of the goal. He won three aerial duels as well. I mean, when Callum came on, he played exceptional too. Don't get it twisted. Like, not just from the goal. He played very well. So, I mean, the whole team played well. I think it was a good game, all in all.
I might have to give it to Cedric, bro.
Yeah.
I ain't gonna lie, bro. He won five duels.
That's what I'm saying.
One clearance. He had two key passes, 85% pass accuracy.
He did play good. I wouldn't be mad if you gave it to Cedric.
I might have to give it to Cedric.
And he had Daniel James on his side that he took care of.
Yeah,
that was their danger guy.
That might be who I pick, bro. I don't know. All right. I think he did pretty well for himself.
Okay. So let's do this. We're going to take a quick break. Then we're going to go in and get into our questions and finish up with the Leicester preview. And that'd be about it.
All right. Sounds cool. Good to me.
Be right back. And we are back for part two of SFG podcast episode 28. I am your host again, Lion Zion 4, aka Mr. Lion BKA, all of that good stuff, right? I'm still here with my dog Sick, S-E-K, not Sick, because he's not a sickly guy. Sick. People be asking me, is it Sick? I mean, no, it's Sick. It's
I get Coach asked Sick. That a lot too.
So Coach Scruffy. So let's do this. We're gonna go right into our questions because we have quite a few, and we're a bit pressed. So let's go ahead and start that. Shout out to everybody that's been sending the questions in. Again, if you want to send it to us, you can add us at sfgpodcast4@gmail.com, or you can see us on you can send us questions on IG. We're gonna start putting up IG story posts about questions and questions for the pod, so that way people can answer it through there, and or on Twitter too, or on sfgpod on Twitter too as well. So first question, we're gonna go with Ryan. Shout out to Ryan Deans. In one of the SFG pod, one of the Arsenal groups that I'm in, he asks, I guess, will Laka start more? Should he be offered a new contract? First question. I'll let you start there.
Should he start more? Yes. Should he get offered a new contract? Yes. And the reason why I say yes is just to add value to his stock, if that makes sense. Because I think, like, right now, since he only has a year left, I feel like we can only get, you know, certain amount, maybe like a $10 to $15 million, you know, fee.
Yeah.
And I feel like if he has that extra year, whether he wants to stay or not, I do feel like we need to, you know, kind of move on to maybe a younger, more hungry striker, if that makes sense. Because I feel like, you know, we can kind of sell him to a contender in Europe and get a decent amount. I'm hoping that we can maybe get like a $20 to $25 million for him, realistically. But yeah, I mean, I say yes to both of those questions just because, you know, I want to add to his value for when we sell him, either in the summer or even in January.
Yeah, I agree. I do think we're gonna play him more. I think we're gonna continue to play him more until Odegaard's ready to take over that role. I think he's been the central hub of our chances and our goals. I mean, he's our leading goal scorer last year. So I definitely think we should be playing him. Do I think we should offer him a new contract? A 1+1, I think, would be good. Just because, like you said, it would add value to him. I wouldn't offer him a 3-year deal, not at his age right now. And I would only say offer the 1+1 with every thoughts as a backup plan, because I think your majority of our money should be, like, if we spend another $100 million next summer, I think, you know, majority of that should go towards a striker. Whether it's a Haaland, I'm obviously romanticizing, rather it's a Haaland or something like that, I think we need to be spending minimum $50 million on a striker, considering also Aubameyang at the end of his deal as well. Yeah. And I think if you don't find the market in that, if you cannot find the guy, then yeah, renew those guys one for one. Why not? I don't see why. And then, you know, best case scenario, if we're in some type of European competition, you would need to get that in the first place. I don't think Eddie's the guy. I think Eddie's will be sold at the end of the season, or will be leaving on a free, depending upon his contract situation. I think Balogun's needs to go on loan, because I think you've already said he's you know, you gave him a long term commitment already with his contract, and I don't think Martinelli's exactly ready yet either. I think he does need to be playing more too as well, but.
I think he's gone on loan as well.
Yeah, maybe. I think you put him on loan. Yeah, I think you do put him on loan, but you have to also have somebody here, right? Because you're going to be playing more competitions next year, best case scenario, too, as well. So you don't want to throw all these guys on loan, and then you don't have the squad to do that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I agree.
So I think it depends.
I think he needs to go on loan from January to...
Oh, okay. I can see that.
Not next season. All right.
Yeah, this season. One of them needs to go on loan. Between Balogun and Martinelli, somebody needs to go in January.
I honestly think they both need to go on loan.
I don't know about both, because AFCON's coming up, and you also have to think about that. You know, with Aubameyang being gone for that, Pepe being gone for that, and Partey, I don't think both of them should go on loan.
Yeah, I guess. But my thing is, but hear me out. So, how about putting, you know, Odegaard on the right side, and then having Saka on the left side?
Because if you remember correctly,
you know, Odegaard had his best
in Spain.
In Spain, mm-hmm. on the right side when he was at Sociedad.
That's a fact.
So
that's a fact.
That's why I say I feel like they both need to go on loan, because I think we have players that can, you know, do a job for us for those 2 to 3 games that we will miss, and those 2 to 3 games aren't like, you know, super big teams. I think the only big team we play is Chelsea.
I hear you. You're right. They're only missing like 3 games. However, you also have to think about injuries. You got to think about, there's a lot to consider. And we're talking about the business end of the tournament. Of the season. I see your point, and I think Balogun, on very minimum, Balogun should go on loan. He hasn't had, you know, since everybody's been healthy, he hasn't sniffed the field. So I would say Balogun minimum should go on loan. I think we should keep Martinelli, because he can play a multitude of positions. And I think maybe Eddie. You know, maybe put Eddie on loan. Well, Eddie's going to be around. If we're going to be in the cup competitions, he's going to be around. And he's going to stay because he's gone in the summer anyways. So
honestly, I honestly, they're saying that they might... They might extend him.
I hope not.
Yeah.
I mean, but I understand that too. It could be also the business thing too, right? Because then you'll get more value for him as well too. He's still a relatively young kid, right? What is he, 22 now, 21? Eddie?
Yeah, I believe he's 22.
Yeah, so. But yeah,
turned
so
22? Well, yeah.
I think you definitely you can extend him. I would extend him for a one-on-one, for 1+1. And just because he's good for the team, the club. You can see, like Locke said, it's just like Smith Rowe has said it, Martinelli has said it, and plenty of guys have said it. Like, they've learned a lot from him. He's one of the veterans that you want to have around. But anyways, next question from Sawande. Given that we are playing away at Leicester, what should be our playing strategy, considering Vardy may not play? Very good question, Sawande. Shout out to him. So I've been looking up the Vardy, you know, if there's any news on his injury, and I've seen nothing. And so I could he play? Maybe, you know,
possibly. Yeah, I think he might be back training again.
Yeah, I think he might be in training. So yeah, let's assume he plays, right? So if he ends up playing, I don't think it changes. I honestly don't think our strategy changes. I think we play the same exact team. Jamie's fine. Roger said on Wednesday evening after City's Carabao Cup shootout success against Brighton. He trained this morning, Wednesday, and joined back in the group. All the guys are fine. So he's playing. I think we should play the same way. I think like we should have the same back line.
The 4-4-2-ish?
The 4-4-2-ish, 4-2-3-1. Yeah. Okay. The same one. I think here's my thing.
I agree 100%, but continue.
I think if Tierney's fit, you still start Nuno. Here's why. Hear me out. Here's why I say that. If Leicester's playing the same way they've been playing, it's going to be Ricardo on that right side pretty much against Nuno, right? Because on the right, Leicester plays a – I'm going to put up their last game's formation. against Brighton. Not Brighton. That's who they wanted PKs against. When they played Brentford. They beat Brentford last week, 2-1. It was actually a good game. I watched a bit of it. And, you know, Brentford's been lights out this season, right? They've been playing a 3-4-1-2, like that 3-5-2, with Sianku, Johnny Evans, and Amarte in the back. Pereira, that's who I was talking about. Not Ricardo. Isn't that his name? Ricardo Pereira?
Ricardo Pereira.
Yes.
You got it right.
Pereira, I had it right. Yeah, he just has Ricardo. He puts Ricardo on the back of his jersey. Right? He puts Ricardo on the back of his jersey. That's why it's confusing.
Okay, gotcha.
So Ricardo, who I think is one of the best right backs in the Premier League in the last couple of years, when he's fit, he's up and down. This guy is rapid, and he's really good on the ball too as well. Tielemans, Samare in the double pivot, and then Cascaigne, I don't think he's been playing there a lot. Sometimes Bertrand's been there because I think they put Sir Bertrand at left back a couple times. And Madison in the 10, and Vardy and Iheanacho up top. So that's normally how they play. I wouldn't mind playing the same formation because I want Nuno to keep Ricardo honest. You know what I mean? Like, don't give Ricardo the amount of space he's going to have on the right-hand side. If you continue to bombard down that left-hand side, Amarte is not going to be able to deal with Nuno by himself. It's going to have to be Ricardo there helping out. You know what I'm saying? So I would rather that. And then I'm comfortable with Iheanacho and Gabriel one-on-one and Vardy and Ben. That's going to be a big test for them. But I'm comfortable with that. I'm comfortable with
the Mustafi and
yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Much more comfortable. And on top of that, you have Partey and Sambi that can sit. Because remember, Tielemans is a guy you're going to have to mark from 40 yards out because that guy, he has an M16 on his right foot, right? So he will shoot from range. But as long as we press them from that point, they're not going to just touch around us. They don't have guys that are really intricate in small spaces. They have guys, they stretch teams. That's what they do very well. They're a team that likes to stretch players. So Madison will be, I think, a big Madison versus Partey's left Sambi will be a big matchup for us. But I like the formation we have, man. I think Samare and Tielemans are going to have a tough time defending, helping out Johnny Evans with Lacazette, because I think Lacazette is going to take his lunch more or less at a time. You see what I'm saying? I love that matchup. I love that Aubameyang versus Johnny Evans or Lacazette when he gets in that area, or Sianku. I like that. I like those matchups. I would love to see that. I would love to see Saka on the right versus Sianku. Are you kidding me? That's a walking red card right there. He's more than capable of giving that up. So the formation that we have and having ESR being able to help out with Nuno and Ricardo in those areas, and ESR versus Tielemans too as well, because that's going to be a good matchup. I think we just match up well with this team. I think if we play the way we play, I think we're in a good spot. I think if it's not like, you know, we're not battling the elements and I think we match up well. I think it's going to be a very entertaining game. A very, very. I think it's going to be one of the best games of the season, possibly. You know? So, do I think we need to switch our tactics? No. What I do think we need to do, though, is I think it may come down to the substitutions. I think depending upon how the game goes, I would be reluctant to introduce Odegaard quickly, you know, because I may, maybe Lacazette, you know, I don't want to see Lacazette come off the 65th minute. I would rather see Pepe get introduced.
It depends, though.
That into Odegaard, the game.
He didn't train. He hasn't trained yet.
So. Yeah, true. He may still be sick.
He may. I think he's actually the one that's hurt. I think he picked up a little injury. But I don't think he's trained yet. I have to look to see if he trained today, but I know he didn't train.
Gotcha.
He didn't train yesterday or on Monday.
Gotcha. So we'll see. I guess we'll see.
And also, I know you said you don't want to see Lacazette coming off on the 65th minute, but it also depends on what his body
can. His body's like, and yeah, because he'd be running a lot.
He hasn't really played that much.
So facts. And if he does come off, I'd rather see Pepe. I'd rather see Pepe or Martinelli. Agreed. If we're chasing the game, I would rather see. That's a tough one. I think I'd rather see Martinelli, man. I think I'd rather say Martinelli.
I'm not gonna lie, brother. Wait, the way
he's been moving, man, is a madness, bro. Yeah, he's been moving on a madness, dog. And I just, it just looks like he's just, it's so close. He's so close to just breaking it, you know? And to be fair, that's kind of been him. That's kind of been his Arsenal career, right? Yeah. He's always been on the apex of, you know what I'm saying? I just think in a game like this, but also Pepe's, he's a maverick. He's a wild card, right? Pepe's another one, though, that we've seen him come into games and maybe rescue us, get a goal. But the issue is, the difference is, worst case scenario, right? I'd rather have Martinelli than Pepe because Pepe can also lose us a game, right? Pepe can also go in and just not be on. And if Pepe's not on, he's absolutely useless. He's actually kind of a liability if he's not on. If Martinelli's not on, he'll still work defensively. He'll still kind of help us out and do other things, even if he's just not on. Like, I've never seen him in a game where I'm like, man, Martinelli played like shit. You know, like, I've never seen that. I've never seen a game where it's like, damn, Martinelli's really hurting us in the game right now. I've seen the games where he just hasn't been able to get it off, you know what I'm saying, so to speak. But, like, with Pepe, I've seen it, where it's like games that he's not playing well, it's like, damn, get him off the field because he's killing us right now. Like, he's stopping the attacks, he's losing the ball. So that's why I say for Martin, I would rather, now it's a higher reward maybe for Pepe, because we've also seen games where Pepe comes in and got us points and scored us goals, right? And you're like, dang. You know, like, good thing we can put Pepe on the field, right? So it's a toss up, but I think I'm going with Martinelli. I think I would go with Martinelli. I would probably have him. I'd probably put him up front, put Aubameyang on the left, and put ESR in the 10 if we needed to go chase the game. Because I don't want, because like sometimes Martinelli out wide just gets like stuck out there. I think Aubameyang kind of reacts a bit better to that. And I think Martinelli can go sniff out a goal. And it really would just be two up front at that point, right? It really would just be Martinelli and Aubameyang. But, yeah, I don't know. All right, let's go. Let's move along. I guess Sawande asked the same question, Aubameyang, Lacazette, or back to Aubameyang and the kids. We just answered that. Sheldon. Shout out to Sheldon as well. Not from the Big Bang Theory. But Sheldon from Trinidad, shout out to them. What the hell do we do with Pepe? Does he deserve to stay, or should he be moved on in the summer and just cut our losses? I'm gonna let you answer this one. I'm gonna let you answer this one first, man, because Pepe's your guy, bro.
Pepe is my guy.
Actually, no. You know what? I'm gonna answer first because you answer the first one first. I think give him the rest of the season. He's still an important part of the team. I still think he has a bigger role to play in the team because of his ability to be a wild card and score goals. However, I think that what Arteta is trying to build here, I don't think Pepe fits that system, whatever the system is, right? Regardless of that, I just don't think he fits where the direction of where we are going. When Ian Robin played for Bayern, because Ian Robin's probably the closest comparison I can give Pepe to right now. When Ian Robin played for Bayern, he's a very different player. He's the most unique player they had on the team, right? And sometimes his game didn't really suit what Bayern is doing. But he made up for it by his production and scoring goals. And that was the role he played. And then eventually, he did kind of suit their game outside of it, tactically as well. I don't think Pepe has that ability right now, personally. And I think it's difficult, man, with his age. And he's had a lot to deal with. Coming to the team with a completely different system from France and then having three different managers. And, you know, we didn't know if the manager really rated him or not. He had to change his game. And to be fair, he's done almost everything Arteta's asked him to do to try and get into the team. But where we are right now, if we can get 35, 40 million for him, I think we would do it. I think we would do it because I think we can find other guys out wide that can do what Arteta wants them to do. So that's just me. What about you?
I was telling somebody, I said, I think that Pepe is going to be the first person sold out of, like, everybody that, you know, all the fringe players that, you know, that are supposed to be gone besides them, like, out of all the rest of the players, I think Pepe is going to be the first one sold. And it goes based off of what you just said, that I just don't think he fits what Arteta is asking of the players right now. But he has done a good job to, you know, be productive. Because last season he was, if not, you know, the top player in productivity, as in when it comes to assists and when it comes to goals put combined. I think he was either number one or he was top two, top three, if I'm not mistaken, like of all comps. So I'm torn between, like, if we should, you know, keep him or not. Me personally, you know, obviously I like Pepe. I think he deserves to play and, you know, get his chance. But I do think he's a little bit streaky, and I don't think we need that right now. Like, I feel like we need somebody that's gonna either gonna come off the bench and be productive almost every time, or be a starter and, you know, make a name for yourself and be productive as a starter.
I hear that. So that's fair.
That's my thing. I'm torn between, you know, the two.
Oh, that's fair. That's fair.
I rate Pepe and his ability, but, like, realistically, I could see why he would be, you know, the first player sold. And I agree, if we do get like a 35, 40 million offer for him, I do think that, you know, Arsenal takes it and they try to get, you know, somebody maybe, I guess, even though he's still young, he's only 25, 20, I think.
And that's the thing too. It's like, he's still like pretty young, but
he's still young. So he can get,
he know, can he, still get the value. And I can see a team, like, I can see a French team come back in and give us 35, 40 million for him.
And I honestly think if he goes to a French team, I think we'll see the old Pepe.
Yep, for sure. He'll have more freedom there. So I'm with that. I hear that. But we'll see. I still say we wait till the end of the season. He still has a big role to play for us. So yeah, let's see. 100%. Okay, so we're going to go rapid fire at this point because we don't have that much time left. Should Martinelli – this is from Ryan L. Shout out to Ryan. Should Martinelli go out on loan in January? I think we just answered that question, right?
Yeah.
I personally think he shouldn't. You think he should. I think we both agree he needs to be playing more. So I think between him and – I think it's either him or Balogun need to go out on loan. And I think considering Balogun's playing significantly less minutes than Martinelli, and as we can see in the cup match, Balogun didn't even get on the field for the cup match. So I think it should be Balogun first. But we'll see.
I do think Balogun goes out on loan this January, though.
Yeah.
I'm just hoping that it's to an EPL team, though.
Yeah, me too. That's what I'm hoping for, too. Go to Norwich. I would love to see him at Norwich. You know what I'm saying?
I heard something about maybe even Brighton.
Ooh, that'd be interesting.
They kind of need a striker.
Yeah, right. Better than Mbappe. Fuck Mbappe. Anyways, so Sawande again. Yo, shout out to Sawande, bro. It's good. I got man been sending some questions in. He's a friend of the show too, as well.
Some good ones.
Did any player impress midweek to deserve a shout for Saturday's game?
No.
I was gonna say El Neni, maybe the most, but I wouldn't to start now.
Nah.
Mainly, he just had to shout for the game, like just to. Maybe Eddie, right? Maybe Eddie, but I still would rather see Martinelli than Eddie, though. That's just me.
Agreed. If we're gonna base it off of that game, then I do think, you know, Eddie deserves it a little more than Martinelli.
Yeah, but true.
Just based off of that game.
Just off of recent form.
Yeah, just off of that game. But, yeah. You know, obviously I would like to see Martinelli more than, you know, Nketiah, just because I know that he's going to be playing for us longer.
Yeah, exactly. So. Robin says, should Arteta persist with the Aston Villa approach / formation, or will it depend on the opponent? I think we answer that too as well. I think he goes to, I think the same exact team. I think it's the same team. Yeah. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I think that approach works because we're not being pragmatic. We are forcing our hand on their teams, right? On the teams that we're playing against, and we're trying to play our way, which is very good, man. I mean, you know, when we went 22 and beaten under Emory, people did say it was very pragmatic and we changed our approach per game, and that was a lot to do with it. Was a kind of a similar situation, right, where we started the season without our guys. KT was injured and Bellerin and all these guys, and then we finally got the guys back, and then we went 22 games unbeaten, and we were 1 point off of fourth place. So I think it's super similar situation, starting the year off the way we did, got our guys in midseason. The difference is now we don't have European football. Like, we don't. That's kind of what killed us at the end of that season. Remember, Emery made some bad choices. We went to Wolves and we needed a point, and we got 3-0. And then, like, you know, we dropped points in major situations, and he put all his eggs in the Europa League basket. And I don't fault him for it. Maybe if he thought, listen, if the three-time at the, you know, European Europa League champion manager says, hey, I'm going to put my eggs in the European Europa League basket where I've won three times instead of a top four spot that I've never won before in a very difficult league, I don't fault him for that. He tried it. He put his faith into our guys, and they failed us, especially Ozil. But that's a different, you know, let me start it about that. That's a different conversation for a different day. But, yeah, I think we should stay with that formation for sure. And then we got one more from Ajani. Shout out to Ajani, the pessimistic gooner, who I'm going to call him from now on. What does Saliba's future look like? You want to answer that first?
Yeah, and you know, I at first, the beginning of the season, I was like, yo, why the hell are we putting him out on loan again, da-da-da-da-da. But actually, like, thinking back on it, like, I think this was actually a good loan deal for Facts. Us. And this is the one that I you know, feel like kind of makes the most sense in a way. I do think he comes back to our team next season and actually, you know, tries to make a name for himself finally. But I'm not mad at him being out on loan this season anymore. So, you know, obviously I do think he's going to have to figure out how to fit all three of them into the team at once. And that's why I said maybe going back to a back three. But we'll see, man. I do think all three of them need to be on the field at the same time.
Yeah.
Based off of how they're playing this season. Obviously, you know, things can change over the summer. But, yeah, man, I think Saliba comes back during the summer. And I think we sell either Holding or Chambers. To be honest with you, most likely Holding, just because Chambers can either play center back and right back.
Yeah, so yeah, I think he's probably going to be Holding.
He's a little bit more versatile.
But, yeah, I agree. I think he'll be Holding too as well. Did you finish? I wanted you to get through.
Yeah, I'm done.
Okay. I think for sure we bring him back. I think this is one of the best loan deals that we could have asked for. He's obviously showing his worth. I think the Saliba Arteta thing's a bit overblown in my opinion. I don't think that he absolutely hates the player. I think, you know, if you took out Saliba's name and you took out Arteta's name and you took out Arsenal and you just looked at the situation from a macro standpoint, you have a 21-year-old center back that was bought 2 years ago when he was 19, right? A 19-year-old center back that played relatively well in his first. His first season at Saint Etienne playing Ligue 1, right? He had 16 appearances. Played very good, but he was 18 years old. We then brought him to the Premier League, where at 19, a 19-year-old player just wasn't ready to start yet, according to a coach. We then sent him back on loan again, and now he's playing well. So I just don't. I mean, well, he went on loan. He went on Saint Etienne loan again and came back. Wasn't ready again. Then he went on loan again, and now we're fine. We're three loans in. We're three loans into from he was 18 till 20 years old now. Right? He's 20 years old, right? Yeah, 20 years old. He'll be 21 next year. If you could told me that any 18, 19, 20-year-old center back from France is not ready to play in the Premier League, I'd probably say, yeah, I believe it, because there's not a lot of 18 to 21-year-old center backs starting in the Premier League. So what's the problem? You know what I'm saying? Like, what is the issue? We want this to happen. We want him to go and develop. And if he comes back and he's ready to play, then yes, great. If he's not at 21 years old, then that's also fine. If he needs to sit on the bench, then let him sit on the bench. Now, the main thing, too, is a lot of people see what's happening in France and saying, oh, well, you know, look at all of this, and he's doing well there, and not good enough for Arsenal, and blah, 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 blah. Look, if PSG comes up next year and says, hey, we want to buy him, okay, cool. He's about 60, 70 million.
I'm gonna use Chelsea as an example, because I do think we're trying to use their, you know, their system with
the kind of mirroring it, yeah.
Which you know, I mean, it's a good thing to have, because our youth program is definitely turning for the better.
Mm-hmm. For sure. For sure.
But let's use don't be mad if I butcher his name, but Chalobah.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, baller. Right.
Prime example, bro. Mm-hmm. He went out on loan like
a couple times, right?
He went out mm-hmm. on loan like four times.
Mm-hmm. Facts.
Three times. Facts. And then now Facts. Look at him. He's starting at Chelsea, and mm-hmm. he's doing really well.
And he's not starting every game, mind you.
Now he is.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like
at the start of the season.
At the start of the season, he wasn't like, you know, they eased him in, and then he was able to, you know, he didn't have the pressure that Saliba would have had on him. You see what I'm saying? Like he kind of eased himself into the team.
But like mm-hmm. I use him as the same thing, because I think Chelsea is a perfect example of, you know, mm-hmm. having the
playing
best
with young
youth,
guys,
best youth team. The best one of the best youth teams,
mm-hmm. youth academies for sure.
Youth academies, and. Mm-hmm. You know, they do a pretty good job with incorporating those kids Facts. Into the first team when they're ready.
Yep. And not to cut you off, Chalobah is 22 years old.
Yep. So imagine he went out on loan for mm-hmm. 3-4 seasons.
Facts.
And guess how old he was? He was around Facts. 18 as well.
Facts.
So that's why I feel like, you know, at first, you know, I kind of was like, damn, yo, we ain't got no center back, so why the heck do we?
Yep, exactly. That's what everyone was saying. Everybody's saying that.
I definitely will be the first to put my hands up and say, yo, all right, boom. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say I overreacted, but I think I could have, you know, looked at the bigger picture a little bit.
No, you made a decision based off the information that you have. You now have new information, and you can. It's okay to change your mind. You know what I'm saying? Like Definitely. People get this stigma that like you, once you stick with something, you can't have. There's no nuance, right? You can't get new information and say, oh well, you know what? Based off this, this has changed. Life is changing. Life changes a lot. You know what I'm saying? People develop. People don't develop. Things happen over time, and you're allowed to say, yeah, okay, I've now changed my mind. This is what happened now. You know, same thing with Aaron Ramsdale, same thing with, you know, when we thought we were dumb for giving up Emi Martinez, and we're in a great situation now. Like it's a lot. Like it's okay for things to happen and change over time. It's how you adapt to that really matters, right? And going back into the Arteta thing, Arteta said in one of his interviews recently that he had no choice but to play Lacazette after he saw what the impact he made on the team when he played against Palace when he got back on. And he was able, and a good manager does that. A good manager sees, oh damn, the tide's turning and changing, and the players are reacting this way, and I need to now change it up. Lacazette wasn't going to play. He wasn't going to get that start last week had he not played like that, right? And then look what happened. And now he's probably a mainstay in the team now. You have to be a man. You have to be able to adapt. You have to be able to change your mind. You have to be able to see new information, process it, and then be able to change what you're doing based off of that. Because if you can't, you're going to be stuck behind. So I agree with that. I think Saliba 100% is doing the right thing there. Look, and maybe there is something wrong, right? Maybe he doesn't like Arteta. Okay, cool. You want to stay? You want to leave? Okay. Go ahead and tell your club that you want to go to PSG or any of the big team that would probably get him. 60 million, please. 70 million, please. Thank you. Oh, you don't got that? All right. Well, he'll be back at London Colony. You know what I'm saying? So is that simple for me? I think he's either we own his rights, right? Like as a player, and he's an Arsenal player. And if anyone wants to come and inquire about him, that's how much he will cost. He cost us 30 million, right? Was it 30 million we played for him? 30, 35? One of the two. He cost us 30. So we need minimum 65 million. Minimum, and he's 21 years old. Minimum 65 million. How much did Legit go for from Juve? 70?
Yeah.
That was how many years ago? Nah, we need that. We need that. come off that PSG. Come off that City or whoever. Come off of that. Anybody that wanted to come test our metal right now, come up off that. We need that. So unless you, if that's not the case, I'm looking forward to seeing William Saliba in an Arsenal jersey next summer. I mean, next preseason. So, all right. So I think that was our last question, right? And listen, if we didn't get to you guys, I apologize. I think that was our last one. We were trying to get to a good amount of them. And, you know, we appreciate everybody coming out to send those questions. Like I said, we're going to try to do more of these. And put up some Instagram stories and stuff like that. But that's all we got for today. We're gonna stop here. We're going to definitely get you guys a review pod of the Leicester game. And you know, we got some great games coming up, man. Oh, let's do score predictions.
I'm going to say 1-0 to the Arsenal.
Ooh, goal scorer.
Ooh, mm-hmm. I'm gonna go Lacazette.
Ooh, like that. I like that. I'm going to go 2-0 to the Arsenal. Now, last week I said 3, I said 3-0, I got 3-1. I said a goal scorers were Partey, Aubameyang, Lacazette, and they were Partey, Aubameyang, and ESR. I'm going to go 2-0. I'm going to say Saka and Lacazette.
Technically, I won, though, right? Because, you know, it's 3-1. You know, you subtract 3-1. Yeah, you got 2-0.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, keep going. Mats it, bro. Mats it out. Mats it. Go on and down. Mats it now. All that mats work now. All that mats, they work. I don't know how that works. Mats it, bro. Mats it. That way, you remember the meme with the guy and all the numbers everywhere? That's you right now. You're trying to put the number. Yeah, well, if you carry the one, so. And you take away the four.
You carry the one. Exactly, bro. You know? You see how that works?
No, I don't see how that works. I don't. I don't know how you match that out.
Oh, man.
Anyways, man. Look, it's been real. It's been fun. Yes, I'm hoping for an Arsenal victory so we can remain unbeaten. Shout out to everybody. Look, man, the season's getting exciting, man. It really is. And we got some big games coming up after Leicester City. So we're gonna go ahead and we'll definitely have a review pod of the Leicester game and a preview pod coming up for the next games. I think international break's coming up, if I'm not mistaken. And I think
another week or two,
right? So because after Leicester, we have Watford, who's also not been playing bad. We have Watford at home on the next following week, and then international break, and then we have a big trip to Anfield, November 20th, which we're probably may have some friends on. We have some guests on that podcast too, as well, some Liverpool fans. So, yeah, man, good times, and we're right in the thick of it. So I'm hoping for the best. So. Anyways, everybody, peace to your journeys. Yes, safe, yes. Be safe, be loved. We love you guys. Appreciate you guys for all of the positive feedback again. We couldn't do it without y'all, man. So really appreciate that. And anything else? Any last words?
Keep rocking with us. Thank you.
For sure.
Peace.
Peace.